engagement day, I bought the miles I've been a child. Now I'm a man, I've reached the age, just doing my best to break the cage. Left in a world so full of doubts, I wondered what it's all about. The rain fell hard on your facade, you kept it hid inside your jaw. And the owls don't know. The pull of God can only yield to those out working in the field. The trees are tall, the grass will grow until from all there is to know. The bud is young, the stem is weak, the fool is left only to see. The crazy ways of other days will bring us back to the same place. And the owls don't know why the glowworm glows. And the owls don't know that it just won't go.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Fireside Chat with David James. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I thought we'd speak about just anything, several things, this particular show. I've learned a lot of things recently, and I keep building my arsenal of what I can do. For instance, I had a power jack that I've had for years, and I bought it, and I've probably used it 3 times. You know, thank God I didn't have to use it that many times, you know what I mean? And so, after I got here, I was testing it out and it didn't work. And so, I usually watch videos on things and see what people do. And just by seeing it, I'm able to, because I'm mechanically inclined, I'm able to perform these things, you know. I had a friend say to me, you can't just watch YouTube videos and be able to do things, you know. It's not the same. Well, but it is the same in a sense of when you've done mechanical things, you can do, you know, you can do things that are mechanical like that. And I achieved the same thing as the fellow on the video. My power jack now works. And it's just all taking things apart and putting them back together, you know. Paying attention. And it's always paying attention. It's always having patience. Extremely important, you know. So, I was able to do that. I've learned a whole bunch of things recently. So I made signs, and I'm trying to get people to come in to get things fixed and so on and so forth. But obviously this is the wrong time for that. And speaking of that, I have zero fear. I don't know about you about this particular thing, because I'm just not going to worry about it. And you see, the most fearful people at this time in the world are those that are the most evil people in the world. It's always that way. The people that know the Father and that have a relationship with the Father and love Him and have tried to obey Him and this and that, we don't have that fear, because we know that we have done our best to do what His will is. and we have not been intrinsically evil. So we have a confidence that we don't have to be fearful. See, like I told you before, I don't fear the police or that kind of stuff because only criminals need to fear. Well, maybe I should take that back. Today's police force is a little different. Maybe it's not only criminals that should fear the police, but you know what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean? It's the criminal that has to fear the police. It's funny, though. Things have changed. The dynamic has sort of changed, if you do think about it. These criminals shoot police. So there's it's kind of like the world is all messed up and upside down. Usually, you know, those who fear the police are the ones that are the most, they're criminals. Today, it's a little different. The dynamic is a little different, but that's the way it generally works, and that's all I'm saying. You know what I'm trying to imply. So if you're somebody that obeys the law, you know, you shouldn't have to fear anything. So I don't waste my time fearing this. And when I want to go out, I go out. I'm not obeying any orders or anything like that. When I want to go out, I'll go out. Let's, a woman from England sent me an email, and it was quite interesting. It was about the global deaths, January 1st to March 30th. 2020. Listen to these numbers. 35,016 people supposedly died from coronavirus. 75,645 mothers died during childbirth. Boy, that is wild. 118,980 died of the seasonal flu. 240,056 died of malaria. 262,441 died of suicides. 330,367 died in traffic accidents. 411,415 died of HIV/AIDS. I didn't know that was still going on at that rate. Wow. Listen to this. You wonder why the Jew sells alcohol, right? 612,105 people died of alcohol. 1,223,439 died of smoking. 2,009,990, how do you like that number, died of cancer. 3,177,081 died of communicable disease. But get a load of this. 10,402,251 died of abortions. Nobody's worried about the abortions, are they? As a matter of fact, just the opposite. There are a lot of people, if you heard this week's news, there are people, politicians, that they're worried that we can't continue these abortions quick enough. Isn't that interesting? Thanks to Diane for sending that in. Now, there's another particular thing that someone sent in. And it's about the mark of the beast and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just going to cut to the quick. Because here's this filthy, dirty Bill Gates again. And this relates to everything. Bill Gates recently stated on Reddit that digital certificates will be used to identify who received the upcoming COVID-19 vaccine, and these certificates will also be used to identify who can conduct business or not. Here's how this plan is already backed by a massive organization called ID 2020. Bill Gates pointed to major changes for ordinary people that could have privacy and civil rights implications. Eventually, he says, we will have some digital certificates to show who has recovered or been tested recently, or when we have a vaccine, who has received it. Gates also called for a national tracking system. What a wonderful creature this thing is, isn't it? I mean, it's as evil as it possibly could be. I wonder how many demons live in this body of his. So he said, in Seattle, the University of Washington is providing thousands of tests per day, but no one is connected to a national tracking system. And that whenever there is a positive test, it should be seen to understand where the disease and whether it we need to strengthen the social distancing. Excuse me. Gates clearly believes the public will accept being branded with digital certificates as easily as they accepted barcodes or consumer items. According to Gates, people shouldn't be concerned about Big Brother invading our privacy and tracking us and our children. This technology will only be used for safety and convenience, he says. Yes, sure it will. Isn't it nice how the government, who can't even wipe their own buttholes, they're always wanting to protect us and take care of us, but you see, they can't do it, you know what I mean? Remember during Katrina, they couldn't handle it. The government couldn't handle it. They can't do anything right. They're so incompetent, it is just ridiculous. The one thing that Trump did recently that I thought was interesting is the money that is supposed to get doled out, the $2.3 trillion or whatever it is, that's going to get doled out to the so-called American public, probably to those who don't need it and not to those who do, like myself, right? Well, he took a Jew off running that situation. You see, the Jew was going to decide where the money was going to go. Do you know where the Jew would have sent the money? Do you have any idea where he would have sent it all? Yeah, to the synagogues, to the Jewish schools, to every, you see what I mean? So he actually took and put a white man, in charge of that. Now that was a reasonable, good move. But isn't it interesting how he wants to, Bill Gates feller wants to make sure we have all kinds of tracking. You see, that tells you that within Microsoft, he believed the same things and has been making sure that that has taken place all along, you see. He needs a good smack across his head. And hopefully somebody will give it to him like the father. Now listen to this kind of thinking. Right? The world has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion, he says. Now, if we do, listen very carefully, please. Now, if we do a really great job on these new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 to 15%. Bill Gates, Microsoft globalist, member of Bilderberg Group. So if we do a good job, we'll kill a good percentage of people, maybe 10 to 15%. If we, that means them, not you and me, you and I, you and me. You see, They want to kill. And this guy wants to kill. Isn't it interesting how this guy has gone over and has, through whatever he has done over there, has helped the African population to grow exponentially, to the point where in 20 or 30 years, it's very possible that one in four on the earth will be an African. And then 2 years ago, he came out and he said he regretted it. And you see, these people are, you see how contradictory it is? Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower the world's population. See? If we do a good job. You know, meaning if the Jews or they or science, you know, where man is God. And whoever wrote this, they put Matthew 16:18, and I say also unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The Bill Gates of hell. Thank you for sending that in. You know, it's just amazing to me. Oh, let me tell you this too. Okay, so something else, a different type of a thing. I had built some planters for the outside of the house to plant herbs for cooking, because fresh herbs with cooking make all the difference in the world. And I've just had my first yield right before the show. Me and Miss Elke went outside and took a pair of scissors and a bowl, and I cut the scallions, or bunching onions, they're called to some people. You cut the tips off of them. And also, I have grown my first and got my first handful of chives. I'm also growing basil and rosemary. I have a rosemary plant that lasts throughout the winter, and she's doing pretty well. So rosemary's wonderful with potatoes or chicken or whatever. You can use it for anything you want. It's very, very good. And then I have sage and two different kinds of thyme, regular thyme and lemon thyme. And this morning I had put the seeds in the water for overnight or so, a little more than that maybe, and I planted parsley. So whatever dish you're making, whatever kind of thing you're making, getting some uncooked food in there really will give you some wonderful nutrients and wonderful flavors that will make your meal turn from regular to, you know, hepped up. It's wonderful. I mean, if you're making an omelet and you have chives, chives are just, and bunching onions. I'm also going to experiment now with leeks, and which are the bigger. Leeks are like huge bunching onions. And so, you know, I've got two major planters, and I'm working on some other things too. I want to have it so that you can grab a handful of chives anytime you want it. That is the most wonderful thing. Chives are so good. You just take them, you know, say you made a nice omelet. Well, you take those chives in a handful, and you just take some scissors and cut it right over, and it's beautiful. You know, leeks are a wonderful thing, too, because, you know, you can buy them usually in a bunch of three. And so if you're cooking up a nice chicken dish, like I've learned to cook many different dishes. I cook chicken orange. Now listen, you know, I'm not saying, you know, this is just basic chicken, you know what I mean? But you learn how to do things and techniques, and you can cook better than restaurants. You know, I've been cooking for many years because I don't have a woman to cook for me. Even my own mother never cooked for me, really, when it came down to it. And that's a shame in itself. So if you have a mother that has cooked wonderful meals for you, or a wife that has cooked wonderful meals for you, that's such a wonderful thing to, you know, have, because it's an expression of love. But anyway, I don't mind that I had to learn how to cook, because it's just an important thing. I've been learning how to make bread and flatbread and pizza crust. You know, there's a lot to trying to make a pizza at home. You know, very few things I lost when I left Boston. I really don't miss Boston. But I do, there's a few things that were lost in the process. And one of them was, like I told you, I might have said this before, that pizza. In Boston, you can go to, you know, any city or any town or whatever, and there'll be a great pizza place, or several of them. And, of course, the steak and cheese. That's something that's lost that I have not been able to replace yet. Also, you know, where I am, in Boston, you could buy a bag for, I think it's like a pound of it or more, for about $5 of, you know, Parmesan cheese or, you know, Pecorino Romano. Which I slightly, believe it or not, like Pecorino Romano better. I think it's got more flavor. It's got salt in it, yeah, but it's got more flavor. And that was lost. But I was able to find out where I could buy it, and I've just learned how to do it in the food processor. So I've regained that. That's something that's kind of important to have if you cook Italian meals, or it's good on anything, you know. But the steak and cheese, the reason why that's difficult is because it's the best steak and cheese that I've ever had, ever. In Philadelphia, that's where they claim the Philly steak and cheese, but it's not as good as Boston steak and cheese. It's just not. The reason why Boston steak and cheese is so good is because it's, I guess what they do is they leave the meat sort of semi-frozen, and you put it on the slicer and cut it very, very, very thin. And when you're cooking it, you cook it with, say, they have a thing called the steak bomb or whatever, you know, steak and cheese, or you can just have steak and cheese and onions, or steak and cheese and peppers, or whatever. So when you're cooking it on the grill, you're using one of those bench clearer things, you know, it's for the kitchen. And what you're doing is you're chopping up the meat into a kind of a fine, you know, it's not like hamburger fine. It's just hard to explain to you. It's still steak, but it's chopped up finely. It's not like a Philly cheesesteak or any other cheesesteak. Not only that, but they don't have those kinds of rolls out here either. So I lost Italian bread. That's one thing that is so awesome, is Italian bread. You know, I guess it's really Italian bread, but you know, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? So I learned how to make the things that I've lost. I could make steak and cheese, but it's difficult if you can't have the product, the steak itself, the way it is. So it's usually cooked on a flat grill, you know, so it's not there's no holes in the grill. It's just a flat sheet of metal that they cook on. And you just chop it all up with the onions and peppers and so on and so forth. You put the cheese on, let the cheese melt, and put it in the sub roll, wrap it up. Let me tell you, you don't know what you're missing if you've never had a Boston steak and cheese. It is top. So that's a loss. You always lose something in the process when you move, you know. And so some of these things get regained. The father is always restoring things, you know what I mean? I am somebody who restores things, so I'm like the father in that way, only he's much, 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 much better at it, and he's on the highest of scales, let's just put it that way. I'm just a fellow, but I'm into restoring things, you know, restoring the kingdom, restoring the word, restoring the Father's name, restoring things that were lost in the process, restoring audio, you know, just that kind of a thing. So I would encourage you that if you don't cook with herbs, there's a lot of vitamins in these herbs, and I think it's a great thing to have some uncooked food. Raw foods are very, very good for you, and they're untainted, especially if you grow them yourself, that is. So it's I never eat too much of anything, you know what I mean? But thanks be to the Father that, you know, all these talents that he's given me, I just keep learning. See, it doesn't matter. You know, they have an old a saying that says you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, you can, if the dog likes to learn. You know what I mean? People get set in their ways, and you try to help them. I'm dealing with a brother, you know, that he's his website, you know, he wants to keep the old website, the old way, the old everything. And I tried to help him before, and I was going to, you know, help him build a site and this and that. But he's stuck in his old ways. He wants to be stuck in his old ways, and he doesn't want to listen. But he does want to complain about what's wrong. You know, things keep going wrong because as things progress, other things get lost. You know what I mean? WordPress sites are definitely the way to go, especially if you're going to handle it yourself and you want to upload things and all this. So, you know, changes happen and things get lost along the way. That's another thing that I'm saying here. And to restore them, you know, sometimes you have to be pliable. You have to like to learn. In other words, even in the last 2 years in May, I'll be here 2 years now, praise be to the Father. And the amount of accomplishments that I've accomplished in 2 years, not only by myself, but with help of others as well, you would really be astounded if you knew. And along the way, I have picked up many, many, many new skills. Now, I wouldn't say I'm an old dog, but I'm certainly not a young dog. But I'm just willing to learn. And I just love to learn. So while somebody's watching some race mixing show or something on television every night or something like that, after I get done with my day of working or whatever I do, I'm learning. I'm watching people fix cars. I'm watching people diagnose problems in cars. I'm watching people fix lawnmowers. I'm, you know, constantly, I'm watching cooking, people cooking, how to make Italian bread, how to make, you know, bread at home. See, the reason why I need to make bread at home is because the bread in this area, there's nothing that's that spectacular. There's a few things that are good, but it's not really spectacular. So when you can't get something, you need to learn how to make it yourself. And, you know, you don't have to have all the preserves and all the stuff that's in that bread that they sell you in the market. So it can only be a good thing. Not only would it be cheaper, but once, you know, like just because you cook a loaf of bread the first time and you might say, well, geez, it didn't come out exactly like I wanted, so I'm a failure. No, it takes a little while to learn how to cook bread and to make it properly and to make it come out the way it should. And, you know, it's like anything. If you do it long enough, you become good at it. If you have that propensity, I do. Some people may not have that propensity. But one of the things I would say that I learned most of all by watching people fix this and do that and all this stuff is I'm able to fix things myself just by seeing what has happened, like I said before. You see, you've got to be able to absorb these things, and once you get, if you have mechanical aptitude, you know, if you can take apart one thing, you can certainly take apart another. And these things are usually in scale. You know what I mean? There's small things to fix and there's large things to fix. If you're fixing a lawnmower engine, it's just a much smaller version of a vehicle engine, which is just a much smaller vehicle, than a truck engine, which that's beyond my scope. But, the best thing about the whole thing about learning, whether it's cooking, whether it's mechanical fixing, or it's carpentry or anything, is problem solving. One of the best things you could teach your children or learn yourself is how to solve problems. Problems of all types. And once you learn how to solve problems, your life gets better and better and better because you don't get overwhelmed by the problems. You just, and not everyone is easy to solve. Some you have to go to somebody else to solve them. But learning how to solve problems is one of the most valuable things in your life. Other than, of course, the father is much more valuable than anything in your life. But I'm just saying, as far as, learning things and understanding things, solving problems is, you could solve biblical problems. There's all kinds of things. And so I would encourage you to learn, If you think like, well, I could never bake bread. Yes, you could. Yes, you can. You may not be successful your first time out, but you may be. You don't know. I'm getting better at it. There's all kinds of things that have to be taken into consideration if you're cooking pizza, let's say. Well, what usually happens is, and this happens in the professional areas around here that make pizza. When they make pizza, the top is relatively okay, but the bottom's undercooked. And the reason why this happens is it's a misunderstanding. Either they've made the pizza too thick, or they haven't put it at the right level in the oven, or right temperature. The higher the temperature, the quicker it'll cook. But you gotta, I don't really want to run my oven at 500 degrees. You can run it at 450 or, 400, 425 in that area. But as I've learned with this pizza thing, that what you do is you make it as thin as you can. And what you do is you cook the pizza dough first. And then once it's good on the top and the bottom, and I don't mean fully cooked, but mostly cooked, starting to be golden brown, then you put your toppings on and put it in, and it will come out crispy on the top and the bottom. Using cornmeal on the bottom is something that's kind of important too. And another thing that I've realized, and of course I hope this isn't mixing, but when you use flour, if you put a little wheat flour in there, it actually helps to make the crust crustier. And so those are the types of things that, also putting the pizza on a rack that's higher up than the middle of the oven will help a lot. So am I an ace at making pizza now? I would say no, but I'm about maybe 65% towards it. I mean, it's not like the stuff's inedible, but you know, it's a learning process. You know, if you see, you know, if you make your own pizza, you could have about, you know, 4 or 5 ingredients. And if you go and look on the pizza boxes that you get in the supermarket, the list is longer than your fingers, if you get my meaning. Really, all it is flour, water, yeast, cheese, and tomato sauce. And you might use a little olive oil as well. I mean, and salt. Some people use a little sugar too. See, that's only a small amount of ingredients. You see what I mean? But if you look at the ingredients that you see on the pizza boxes, and I'm telling you, you can make better pizza than that. Learning how to make dough and all this kind of stuff is important. I make dough now. And when you make a dough, it can be used for so many things. You can make rolls out of it. You can make bread out of it. You can make pizza out of it. Just depends on, you know, and the longer you let it stew, so to speak, the more flavor it has. And I don't mean there's a certain point when you cut it off, but I'm just saying, you know, like some people just do it for 3 hours, but other people do it overnight for, you know, 18 to 24 hours, and it can make a big difference in the flavor. So the French baguette is one of the biggest challenges. And I've made them before, and I've done okay, but I'm probably only about 38% there. That takes a while to... I know how to make the baguettes. The thing is I'm trying to perfect that the outside of it would be nice and crispy, and the inside would have that holy dough. You know what I mean? It's dough with holes in it. It would be soft inside, but it would be... you know, crunchy. If you tapped on it with your fingers, it, you know, it sounds hollow. Or if you cut it with a knife, you can tell it's crispy. So it takes a while to learn how to do all these things. And I encourage you to do that, to learn how to do that. You know, in life, that's one of the principles I've realized, that if you want to get a job done right, you got to do it yourself. I mean, for the most part. If you're going out and eating at restaurants and paying exuberant prices and all these kinds of things, you may find out that, wow, this really isn't as good as I thought it was. A lot of these restaurants aren't so hot. Now, if you're in a big city, I'm sure you have some good restaurants there. But you would be amazed at the things you can do if you just took a little time to learn. So that's what I would say about that. I wanted to... talk about something else, too. I discovered something this week. And that is... you know, this... where is this? I'm trying to find it here. Come on now. Come on. Where is you? Yeah, here it is. Okay, one thing I wanted to talk about was at the end of April, it's still a time for fire and human sacrifice. Okay, so remember that April 19th to the end of the month is a satanic time of human sacrifice. I wanted to remind you about that. I don't really want to read too much into this article. This show might go a little longer, by the way, which you might like. I mean, we're talking about all kinds of different things, aren't we? So, this fellow wrote this this article, and He explained the extreme importance of this time of the year in occult calendars. Indeed, the last 2 weeks of April, which culminate on May 1st. May Day. And it could be dubbed the most magical, with a K, time of the year. But for all the wrong reasons. Magical. They've always used it like things are magical, like that's a good thing, but it's never a good thing. So listen to this, and I've talked about this before, about April 19th. A quick look back at heat in history reveals something strange. Many violent events involving mass deaths by fire or gunfire occurred during the last 2 weeks of April. Here are some examples. April 19th, 1993. And of course, this goes back too. If we were to go back from this, maybe I'll do that sometime. I'll read you all the things from April 19th. Because this is only starting in 93, this list. Waco Massacre. An FBI assault led to the burning down of the compound of a sect named Branch Davidians, killing 76 men, women, and children. This was a revenge holocaust for 50 years to the day is when supposedly something happened in the Jewish ghettos in Poland, I think it was. And Bill Clinton was up in this. I really wanted to strangle him, to be honest with you. He was very joyful about the fact that, you know, this had happened. I know that sounds funny to you, but the way he was talking about it, you could tell it was a revenge because he mentioned the 50 years prior. Supposedly, Jews were killed in the ghettos of Poland on April 19th, 50 years before this, obviously 43, right? So this was an actual Holocaust, because Holocaust means fire, it means to be burned with fire. Just like Dresden was an actual Holocaust, but the Jews never had any Holocaust at all. So April 19th, 1995, Oklahoma City bombing. 168 people killed. April 20th, 1999, Columbine High School massacre. That was a false flag. April 16th, 2007, Virginia Tech massacre. 32 killed, 17 injured. April 2010, Deepwater Horizon explosion, BP oil rig. 11 killed, hello. Massive contamination ensued. April 16th, 2013, Boston Marathon, another false flag. Fertilizer plant explodes in Texas, 5 to 15 killed. Well, that wasn't the 19th thing, but I'll show you on 19th how many things really happened. It's amazing. If one looks further back in history and outside of the U.S., one would find a long list of horrific events that had happened between April 15th and May 1st. Most of these events feature the same characteristics, a large number of innocent victims who die by fire. Throughout the years, this strange fact was observed by several sources, and here are some examples. I don't need to give you those sources because it's all the liars, CNN fake news and Washington Compost and all that kind of crap. So, occult calendar. Here's a summation of the significance of the end of April in occult calendars. April 19th to May 1st, listen, blood sacrifice to the beast, a most critical 13-day period. Fire sacrifice is required on April 19th. April 19th is the first day of the 13-day satanic ritual day relating to fire. Listen, the fire god, in its lower G, of course, Baal or Molech /Nimrod, the sun god, also known as the Roman god Saturn, Satan, or devil. This is a day of human sacrifice. It's a major day of human sacrifice, demanding fire sacrifice with an emphasis on children. This day is one of the most important human sacrifice days, and as such, has had some very important historic events occur on this day. While the exact dates of occult rituals vary due to moon phases and other variables, there is nothing new about human sacrifices in April. Throughout the centuries and across civilizations, the second half of April was always the time for blood sacrifice. Those were often celebrated through the worship of Baal or related deities. The worship of Baal took many names. Enlil, that was Sumerian, right? Molech, right out of the scriptures. And spread across several civilizations. Being a sun god and a god of fertility, rituals celebrating Baal took place after the vernal equinox, a time of rebirth, and often involved human sacrifice. The cult of Baal celebrated annually his death and resurrection as part of the as part of the Canaanite fertility rituals. These ceremonies often included human sacrifice and temple prostitution. Baal, Encyclopedia Mythica. This practice was also mentioned in the Bible. Jeremiah 19:5 says, "They have built the high places of Baal to burn their children in the fire offerings to Baal, something I did not command or mention, nor did it enter my mind." Today, the ancient practice of blood sacrifices still exists. However, in this mass age, in this age of mass media, the occult elite partakes in mega rituals made to be witnessed by the entire world. Why? For increased magical potency. Remember I said about mass concentration or mass thought, where they get you to all, they get us to think on like this COVID-19 thing, right? See, they get you to think about it. The whole world concentrating on it. That's what this increased magical potency means. The human sacrifice required during many of these occult dates needs to contain the following elements, each one of which is exaggerated to the highest possible degree. Trauma, stress, and mental anguish. Sheer terror. Have we got that going on with COVID-19 right now? Trauma, right? Stress, right? People are losing their jobs. People are, going to lose their businesses and homes and everything like, while the Jew just laughs and sits there perpetually, they can just, no problem. Mental anguish, maybe you've been locked in with your family and there's a lot of stress and there's been a lot of domestic abuse going on because of it, because of the stress. Number two, the final act in the drama should be destruction by fire, preferably a conflagration. Number three, people must die as human sacrifices, especially children, since the darkness views younger human sacrifice as the most desirable. So they talked about the Notre Dame fire that went on. So was that last? Yeah, on April 15th, the Notre Dame fire in Paris, the cathedral, was engulfed in flames. So there's another. Yep. Was the Notre Dame fire a symbolic attack on Christianity? Well, we have an attack on Christianity every day, all day long. Sri Lanka church bombings on Easter Day on April 21st. Yep, killing 290 people. 2 and 9 is 11, you see. So it says, the ruins of St. Sebastian's church in Negombo. So it says, we need to take a step back and recognize the horrific, satanic, and symbolic nature of these attacks. Hundreds of people were killed as they were in church on a holy day and celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So, strange fact, it says here. Sri Lankan authorities were warned about a bomb threat a full 2 weeks before the attacks. Cabinet spokesman Rajitha Sarnartan. I don't know how to say this. Sarnartan said at a press conference that the warnings were not passed on to the prime minister. A tweet from the government official about the risk of a bombing on dating April 11th. And so he says that my 2013 article about the Boston bombings, I wrote these words. While many ascribe the occurrence of these events during the end of April to coincidence, the fact remains mass violent events involving death and fire happen regularly during the same time period that is occultly dedicated to Baal, who is worshipped through fire and human sacrifice. So I just wanted you to think about that, and you watch what goes on from now on, and you'll probably pick up quite a few things. Yeah, this show doesn't have to go on too long. Maybe we will get done in the time. Now, when I was growing up, there were was a comedian duo named Cheech and Chong. And so anytime I get a chance to show you that the Jew has been putting hybrids in front of us for a very long time, I like to show you the evidence that I'm not just speaking out of my hat. I wasn't aware of this. It's funny that Tommy Chong, I never thought, I thought it was just like a name that he used for, you know, the entertainment business. But it's not. It's his real name. So when you see this fellow now, you see he has pointy eyebrows. And I can also see that the tip of his hairline comes to a point on his head, which is receding. But you can still see the point. So there again, now, there's something interesting you didn't know, and I didn't know about Tommy. You know, maybe some of you knew, but I didn't know about it. But let's just read this a little bit. Tommy Chong has got the munchies. It's early afternoon in lockdown in L.A., and last night he was on the pot cookies. You know, very funny. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, that was funny years ago, but it's not so funny anymore. So, I'll just move down the article a little bit. Their characters, Pedro Dipakis, Richard Cheech Marin, and Anthony Mann Stoner Chong, were hopeless wasters, but heroically so. In their frequent spats with the police, they invariably won, even if they didn't have a clue on how, or indeed even noticed that they had won. Now, first thing I decided, well, what I wonder what Pedro Dipakis means. So I find out, and I've been wanting to know this answer for a long time. I found out that Pedro means Peter in Spanish. And when I put in Pedro Dipakis, it just came up Pedro Dipakis on Google Translate. But when I put in Pakis or Dipakis, it means of Baal, but not B-A-A-L, B-A-L-E. So it's Peter of Baal, which is kind of interesting. Let me just quickly go to this again and just put it in, just so I'm sure. I'm just not sure if it was of, and I want to make sure that I'm correct on that. Okay, detect language. Whoops. D. Wow, dipa means bread. Let me see, just one second. Pakis. Okay, that's it. Pakis. P-A-C. A-S. So it's Peter of Baal. B-A-L-E. And a bale is like you bale hay. But in other words, you know, like the church of the bale. You get it? Like the church of a bale of marijuana. Peter is the church. Peter is the, you know, I built my, you know what I'm trying to say to you? That's what it really means to me. And I just thought you might think that was kind of interesting. That was a strange name to take. Pedro, Peter of Baal. So, but there is more to Chong than Cheech, as he is quite quick to point out today. After they split up, he enjoyed success. Blah, 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 blah. I was the lawyer who signed the first contract for them, he says. Hold on, I say, you're not a lawyer. Chong laughs. Well, I was the whitest guy they knew. I looked like a Jewish guy, a lawyer, so literally Bobby Taylor took the contract and gave it to me and said, what do you think? Chong gave it an okay. So let me show you something now. We'll go to Wikipedia's thing about Chong. And his name is Thomas Bing Kin Chong. That's his name. He was born in 1938 in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And he's a cannabis. He's a comedian, actor, writer, musician, cannabis enthusiast, and activist. So he's it talks about that part of it. Now, early life. Listen to this. Thomas Bing Kin Chong was born at the University of Alberta Hospital in Edmonton, Alberta, on Edmonton, Alberta, on May 24th, 1938. His mother was Lorna Jean Nee Gilchrist, a waitress of Scotch-Irish ancestry. Now listen. And his father, or his dad, was Stanley Chong, a Chinese truck driver who immigrated to Canada from China in the 1920s. The senior Chong had first lived with an aunt in Vancouver after arriving in Canada. So, Chong is race mixed. He's an hybrid. An abomination. And I'm sure he's an abomination for many reasons. He said, I dropped out of Crescent Heights High School when I was 16, but probably just before they were going to throw me out anyway. I played guitar to make money. I was about 16. Okay, I'm not going to read that. But here, listen. Now this ought to really explain it to you. It talks about how in the 60s he played guitar for a Calgary soul group called the Shades and so on and so forth. And it says, together with band member Bobby Taylor, Chong opened a Vancouver nightclub in 1963, formerly the Alma Theater. They called it Blue Balls, quote unquote. They brought in Ike and Tina Turner Review, which had never been to Vancouver before. Although Little Daddy and the Bachelor split up a small following, things soured when they went with Chong's suggestion and had themselves billed as Four Niggers and a Chink, or Bowing to Pressure, Four N's and a C. Now listen, this is the key. Another key here. In 1965, the Vancouvers signed with Gordy Records, a subsidiary of Detroit Motown Records. They recorded their debut album and eponymous release, and their debut single, the Tommy Chong composition, Does Your Mama Know About Me, which peaked at number 29, 2 and 9 is 11, or 2 times 9 is 18, 666, on the Billboard Hot 100. While in tour on Chicago, in Chicago for a short time, the band followed opening acts like the Jackson 5. Chung later referred to the young Michael Jackson as a cute little guy. After the band released two additional singles, Chung and a bandmate, Wes Henderson, missed a Friday night performance to apply for green cards so they could become American citizens. I'm trying to find this part right here, which I had seen, that talks about how the single he wrote was about a mixed relationship. I must have missed it somewhere here. Yeah, I don't see it. Just give me a couple of secs and we'll see if I can find it. Blah, 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 da, da, da. Does your mama know about me? Yeah, I don't see it. But that it does say it somewhere here, and I just can't seem to find it again. I read it. But, in other words, he wrote a single, and it was about a race-mixed relationship. You'll just have to trust me on that for the moment. And so you can see why the Jews would promote somebody like this, right? It's the seed of the dragon mixed with the Anglo-Saxon woman again, which is an abomination. And this thing, you don't know. It's a dragon. It's got the dragon seed in it. So why do you think it would turn out the way it did? See, I don't know. I used to think that was all funny and everything, and it is funny in its own way, but it did no good for America. You see what I mean? These things didn't... Cheech and Chong didn't do anything good. And as far as Cheech Marin goes, nobody really knows what he is. He looks to be like another half-breed. Many of the people that you have been witnessing throughout the years, even on Black and White, are hybrids. They've been promoting hybrids before you were born or before I was born. Anyway, so Cheech Marin is, Chung, Tommy Chung is a hybrid. I believe Cheech Marin is too. But I'm not positive of that. I can't really nail that one down. But he appears to be half white, half something. I'm not sure if it really is Mexican or what it is. So, there you have it. So, I just wanted to prove that to you over and over. And, of course, he's writing songs about being, does your mama know about me? I mean, that about being race mixed, you know what I mean? Does your mama know about me? Does she know I'm a chink? He even called himself a chink. So, there you go. Well, until next time, I hope you enjoyed the show. It was something different, where we talked about several different things, or I talked about them with you. That's we, right? So there you have it.
The edge of day, engaged in play, I've walked the miles, I've been a child. Now I'm a man, I've reached the age, just doing my best to break the cage. Left in a world so full of doubts, I wondered what it's all about. The rain fell hard on your facade, you kept it hidden inside your jaw. And the owls don't know. So those are working in the field. The trees are tall, the grass will grow until from all there is to know. The bud is young, the stem is weak, the fool is left only to see. The crazy ways of other days will bring us back to the same place. And the owls don't know why the glowworm grows. And the owls don't, that it just was.